Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Shalom, Rob. Your line is open.
Shalom, Sister Raya. Well, it's good to be back after a couple weeks. I did a little digging around on one of my favorite books by Osho. It's called The Mustard Seed, and it's about the Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, 23 sayings, and each saying has several pages of explanation as to the meaning. And, well, a key teaching of the Gnostic Gospel is taken from Eastern religion, and that is to be ever-present and aware. And, of course, one can find that in the New Testament and the Bible. The egoic mind travels only in time, past or future, not in the present. You know, we're always, if we have stresses, it might remind us of a sad or a difficult event of the past. Or we have some kind of obligation and we're looking into the future. How are we going to be emotionally? Can we handle it? You know, we get overwhelmed with worries sometimes. So when one is in a state of being, which is no mind, time does not exist, yet one is watchful, awake, calm, and reasoned. We're more or less dissolved into the whole, positive energy, self-aware. So a few notes before I go into discussion about the authors, Osho, and in addition, Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle has a popular best-selling book worldwide called The Power of Now. And indeed, it's very much in line with what Osho talks about in his discussion of the Gnostic Gospels. So how to live in the here and now. In addition, just a few things about climate engineering. I can never miss that because that's what my life's mission is. There's an interesting explanation of what's going on with the atmosphere that scientists have uncovered, that we have this tremendous vapor deficit. Even though we get deluged with rainstorms that might drop 10 inches of rain, overall in the earth, we're much drier than one would expect. So I'll talk a little bit about that and its impact on the web of life. Another interesting point that Dane Wigington in his geoengineeringwatch.org blog discusses is how the media cover up the climate and climate engineering continues unabated. The media cover up of this topic. There was a 10-minute clip in which CNBC had a discussion about climate engineering. And again, it's so frustrating because it's as if it never existed, even though it's been ongoing for 70 years. So some of the proposals that were discussed in the CNBC clip are of things that haven't really been done yet. But again, the whole time people like David Gates are saying this is new, when in reality it's not new at all. Well, back to Mr. Eckhart Tolle. I was gifted this book, both the Osho book and The Power of Now, by my sister-in-law. And I'm grateful to her. She's a very intelligent and aware person. And was the first one to immigrate into the United States from my wife's family. And she had heart problems. She went through a lot of things on her own that only she could do. And she's in many ways a hero to my sister. She kind of led the path for my wife's family to the promised land here in the United States, which, as they found, isn't quite the promised land that one would see on the media or hear about in the radio or read about in books in South America. But nevertheless, I'm grateful to my sister-in-law, Maria. So The Power of Now, I wanted to find out who this Eckhart Tolle is, and there's always a bit of personal life, you know, at the beginning of the book, and I thought that was interesting because I think, like most of us, there's been periods where we have these bouts of depression where life is really rough and we just are losing our way, and we're in a lot of self-doubt, which was the case for Eckhart Tolle. When he was about 30, he had this experience where he had this repeated mindset. It's a repeating thought that I cannot live with myself any longer. And in the process, he had a sudden flash of discovery. And he asked himself, am I one or two? And as he asked, because it really sounds like there's two people here, I cannot live with myself. It's like there's two people. So his mind stopped, and he fell into this void, this kind of vortex. And it was a very fearful experience at first, but then as he let himself go into this so-called void, then all of a sudden there was no fear, no depression. And he awoke in the dawn to the beauty that he'd never noticed, the streaming light coming in through the window pane, through the curtains, and everything was just refreshing, and he felt so good. So basically, the pain was so deep that he passed out. He came about years later to understand this sudden loss of suffering, which transformed into complete peace. It's in the spiritual teachings that he pursued. So he became quite well acquainted with these teachings. And so his fearful false self had collapsed during this withdrawal, kind of like a plug out of an inflatable. What was left was my true nature, the ever-present I am. So after this experience, he had 2 years of where he was basically in seclusion and kind of in a state of bliss. One can imagine him sitting at a park bench and spending most of the day just calm and relaxed and enjoying himself. So the physical realm, the exterior world, was out, and his inner calm and inner power was within him. An enlightened man, I guess you could say. So fundamentally, he defines that there's an undercurrent of peace that is always with us. It was with him. Sometimes it's strong, and it's so strong that the people he has presented his many presentations to can feel it themselves and are part of it. Or this undercurrent can be like a background, like a distant melody, but it's there. It's always there. So this sense of undercurrent, this Christ so to speak, or your God essence, or self, as it is sometimes called in the East. It is the indwelling divinity, regardless of whether you are conscious of it or not. And so Eckhart says, you know, if we personalize Christ into a form or an identity, there isn't that can mislead us because he becomes separate from us. There is an ordinary quality about an enlightened person that a person with a strong ego who's so much into the future, so much into the past, would regard them as insignificant, or they would not even see them. Just, they, you know, he talks about Buddha as well, where, you know, a Buddha was revered by many, but many also would have just passed him in the street, not even recognizing his very positive presence. So if you are drawn to an enlightened teacher, and in my opinion, Dane Wigington of this geoengineering, this cause to help salvage and save the planet, I see him as an enlightened teacher. Well, it is because you yourself have some of that enlightenment of presence. You know, my life's experience, being involved with environmental causes and nature and the web of life, as we all are to some extent, it just lit a light when I first heard this Dane Wigington speak. So I came to investigate and follow him as a master. But when you find a master, they're not just your master. They may seem as an incarnation of God, which I believe they are. But then where does that leave you? The master becomes exclusive, a form, an identity, a body. Then you are left out of the divinity. So when one finds a master, it's more or less as they're like a mirror to reflect your own identity beyond name and form, to become more intensely present in yourself. There is no mine or yours. The presence among a master and a student or an initiate is, the presence is one. In other words, the teaching in the taught is the same as, or the teacher to the taught is the same as the teaching. It's all one. So Mr. Toll's book takes recorded questions from his audience and then gives explanations. For example, can you explain the importance of having deep roots within your body? The body can become a point of access into the realm of being. Being can be felt as the ever-present I am, that is, beyond name and form. To feel and to know that you are and to abide in that deeply rooted state is enlightenment, is the truth that Jesus says will make you free, free from the illusion that you are nothing more than your physical body and mind. So it's very revealing, but it's very hard for most people, including myself, to comprehend. You know, words are signposts, but the silence, the stillness, you know, that one discovers at times, maybe just in a flashing moment, is beyond words. So, for example, we know the word honey, and you won't know it till you taste it. If someone says honey is bad, you may never taste it. You would fear to taste it. In the same way, we use the word God, and how personally, if I've been angry and I've sworn in God's name, you know, it doesn't make you feel good. But sometimes it's better if that name gives you such a sense of guilt. Yes. If it gives you a sense of guilt, then you can use another name like Creator that, you know, allows you to be more in the present. So stillness and peace, power and vibrant life, that's what being, presence, is all about. And again, as the author says, the egoic mind has become like a sinking ship. If you don't get off it, you will go down with it. The collective ego, egoic mind, is the most dangerously insane and destructive entity ever to enter this planet. What do you think will happen if human consciousness remains unchanged? So, you know, this is a very well thought out question. And I think the point, whether it comes from Eastern religion or, you know, the Bible, which is, you know, they all overlap. There are some universals. The point of, that we get at is, how do we cope? You know, we can go to sleep. Sex, alcohol, drugs, they act to suppress what our excessive mind is making us suffer with. They delay higher consciousness. But yet, if you take them away, some of us will not be able to deal with ourselves. We might become suicidal or whatever. So it's not to put them down. But in fact, as Osho says, sex is in everything, whether it's flowers, bees, it's throughout all creation. It cannot be condemned. So consciousness, it's evolving throughout the universe. Again, as Jesus came or Buddha came to set an example to help others find their own power within, the power of now. And this I found real interesting because, you know, when I deal with this climate engineering issue, I deal with extinction, you know, the possibility of a runaway climate in just a few years from now, unless we radically change the way we live, the way we consume, the way we overproduce. It's extremely frightening. Again, the mind projects into the future. And what good is, I mean, it's necessary, but how do we remove ourselves from such a painful thought that, you know, we could be wiped out based on our own doings? And that's equally painful. It's like, can one species be so evil to destroy the whole of creation of this miracle planet? Whereas, you know, it's very controversial, of course, because others will say it's nature's fault that nature does its things. It's so powerful. We can't really impact nature very much. So go back to bed. You know, we're fine. It might be getting a little warmer, but you know, we're here to produce. We're here to create. Just live as we are. Business as usual. So it's quite some contradictions going on, and we need to find our way. And again, I remember a discussion with two of my coworkers where they said, well, yeah, you know, if we're doomed, we're doomed. Let it be. And whenever it happens, happens. I suppose there's other planets out there where, you know, they make it, they make it. They don't, they destroy themselves. And it's kind of a shrug of the shoulders. And it right away, responsibility is off your shoulder. And, you know, you go on with your myopic vision of things. But I argue that, you know, myopia leads to dystopia. And the cornucopia, being part of the whole, leads to utopia. You know, the good life that we're bound to keep living if we can awaken to this higher consciousness that Osho and Mr. Toll talk about in the Bible. But again, as I've said before in previous blogs, that, you know, those who wrote the Bible didn't always understand what they were writing. And there is the sacredness of Genesis, the story of Genesis, but we must be very careful that, you know, who wrote it. If you understand the concept of power structure as I do, and as I've shared, you know, on these blogs, even at the time of Jesus, there was a power structure. And that's very much a product of the mind and the progress that the mind has to be used as tools to make, and the body to make tools. But some of these tools get in the wrong hands, and they, you know, the sword and the plowshare. The plowshare, agriculture in and of itself is good, but the sword to kill more people, to plow more land, is bad. You know, that's an example of morality here, that we find meaning in Buddhist religion, in Mohammed or Islamic religion, Christian religion. They're all part of this diversity, getting at some of the basic truths as we live on. So, on the positive, as Eckhart has gone throughout the world speaking, and he's gotten the attention of people like Oprah Winfrey, and I might ask how many people are familiar with the book Power of Now. Let me know, you know, if you've read it. It's I was on an airplane coming home from Utah, and a man said, "Oh, I see you've got that book. Oh, that changed my life." So this, I guess the transformation that this man had, it's like the transformation of the prophet Paul. You know, in the Living Bible, as we are, there are prophet Pauls out here. And perhaps this Eckhart Tolle is like a prophet, as others are. So, again, new consciousness is gaining a foothold on the planet, and the question is, can it gain a foothold in enough time to save this planet? And I'm excited to say that on a personal level, I broke through kind of a barrier this week. I've posted a couple pictures where I have an exhibit at a public library that's adjoining a university library. It shares the same building. But it was a very positive experience. I gave people photo fact information about geoengineeringwatch.org. I had some good discussion. And I also saw, I'd say 9 out of 10 people, you know, I was expecting this. They'll walk by, they'll look down at their cell phone, they're heading to the restroom. They come out of the restroom and that, you know, they're in their own mind. They've got to get to class. So it's kind of a fine line where I could interrupt them now and then and get a conversation started and in a polite way so I could identify people who are interested. I want to go on now to The Mustard Seed, the book by Osho, and I'll read a very interesting saying. It's the 17th saying of the Gnostic Gospel. It's called Movement and Rest. And it goes like this. Jesus said, "Blessed are the solitary and elect, for you shall find the kingdom. And because you come from it, you shall go there again." Jesus said, "If they say to you, 'From where have you originated?' say to them, 'We have come from the light, where the light originated through itself.' If they ask you, 'What is the sign of your Father in you?' say to them, 'It is a movement and rest.'" And it's hard to encapsulate, you know, in this radio blog, 20 pages of discussion on this scripture. But one thing I can say to sum it up is that I've noticed that we all want to feel needed. You know, we're in society. We're bound by society, a society that gives us some freedom, but we're also imprisoned by it. And we go through life, as I do, driving truck, delivering mail and so forth, helping out. It is a good feeling because it has, you know, it's, I would argue that it doesn't really have to be done, but it is being done. And I get into a comfortable routine, and it does allow me to meditate as I'm driving to Rush City or whatever. But, you know, what if we're not needed? And that's a big problem for a lot of people, especially when they retire. So some people who have worked all their life, so-called imprisoned by the structure of their life, can't handle it, and they, you know, their mind goes in depression, and of course, then symptoms come along, heart attacks, death comes about pretty quick to some of these people. So one of the keys of this passage is, you know, can you be happy totally on your own, alone? Can you live that way indefinitely? Because I am, the whole idea is your being is eternal. It's not on a scale of time. There's always been something of me. It's always been there, I guess. If time doesn't exist, you know, then I'm part of eternity. I don't know how to put it. But I'll just read on, since I can't cover 20 pages. That would put you all to sleep, because you have to absorb these things slowly and reread them. But the introduction is helpful. The deepest urge in man is to be totally free, men and women. Freedom, moksha, is the goal. Jesus calls it the kingdom of God, to be like kings, just symbolically, so that there is no fetter to your existence, no bondage, no boundary. You exist in infinity. Nowhere do you clash with anybody else, as if you are alone. And I must say that as I drove a truck overnight, and I still do, it is wonderful to be alone, where I've creatively made poems in my mind, yet I'm totally alert to the driving. In fact, in that heightened state of positive energy, not only am I driving alert, but I'm able to create and be kind of in that stillness, that comfort. So freedom and aloneness are two aspects of the same thing. That's why Mahariva, called this concept moksha, kevaila. Kevaila means, I'm butchering these words, by the way, it means to be absolutely alone, as if nobody else exists. When you are absolutely alone, you will become a bondage. Who will become a bondage to you? When nothing else is there, who will be the other? That's why those who are in search of freedom will have to find their solitariness. They will have to find a way, means, method to reach their aloneness. Man is born as part of the world, as a member of society, of a family, as part of others. He is brought up not as a solitary being, he is brought up as a social being. All training, education, culture consists of how to make a child a fitting part of the society, how to make him fit with others. This is what psychologists call adjustment. And whenever somebody is a solitary, he looks maladjusted. So the person sitting on a park bench every day might be considered by us busy people walking by and taking the bus and whatnot as maladjusted. So society exists in a network, a pattern of many persons, a crowd. There you can have a little freedom at the cost of much. If you follow the society, if you become an obedient part to others, they will lease you a little world of freedom. If you become a slave, freedom is given to you, but it is a given freedom. It can be taken back any moment. And that is the very great cost. It's an adjustment with others, so boundaries are bound to be there. Well, that's as far as I'll get with that part, but there's a couple other parts in these 20 pages that I wanted to share. And this is very interesting. There is a discussion about how Krishna was worshipped in the Hindu religion rather grudgingly. And the character of Krishna was a very happy man who always danced. And he danced with many, many females. And it was his happiness that is well remembered. But yet, there's not much worship there. Why is that? Well, if you consider the crucifixion of Christ, there's a lot of suffering that we see in the symbol of the cross. Well, that spread like fire because we all suffer. It's life's a challenge, and we go through a lot of pain. So, you know, the Christian religion spread like wildfire. But the question that Osho raises is, what about Christ? What did he himself think of the cross? What did the symbolism of the cross mean? Did it mean just suffering? Was he always sad? And, of course, conclusion of Osho is not at all. He was happy, just like Krishna. Because Christ wasn't a light, enlightened man, he was a very happy man. And I know when he walked among people, and I know the New Testament story where Jesus approached the children and told the adults to ease up, let the children come to me. You know, that's an example, you know, of Christ's happiness. So he was not a sad man. I'm reading on again from Osho. But you cannot understand the language of laughter. No, not yet. Your hearts are not ready for dancing, for a dancing God. The world is not yet a home for a dancing God. Krishna seems impossible. Jesus seems to be almost the conclusion of your life. Crucifixion became the symbol. The cross became a symbol, but for Jesus, the cross means something absolutely different. And I would like to tell you what it means to Christ. The cross has two lines, simple lines. One line horizontal to the earth, another line vertical to the earth. That's how the cross is. A crossroad, a crossing point. The horizontal line is time. Time which is past, present, and future. A, B, C, moving in a line. You live on that line. The vertical line is eternity, which is the now. It is always present. There is no past to it, no future to it. It goes higher and higher and higher. It moves higher, not forward. Time and eternity meet where Jesus is crucified. That moment where Jesus dies is now, is the now. If you die in the now, you are reborn. You are resurrected. And there is no death for you because time disappears and you are eternal. The cross is a symbol of time and eternity meeting. And that point must be your death. It cannot be anything else because when you disappear from the time world, you become part of eternity and both cross. Where do they cross? Here and now, at this moment, they cross. So that's really quite a profound passage. Whether one accepts it or not, it's. I read through this, and I guess that's the quality of reading a good book. You don't take notes because that would kind of ruin the reading. But at the same time, I had to dig through half the book to find this passage because I could remember it so well. I wanted to be able to read from the passage. Well, the final part I want to share with Osho, you know, let me just look at the time here to see how we're doing, is the end, which is, what is the sign of the Father? Say to them, it is in movement and rest. So this is the sign of God in us, a movement and a rest. You know, I just worked out on the weights for 20 minutes, and then I sat and rested, and again, the body is anchored into this eternity, this miraculous instrument of ours that brings us consciousness and a soul. When we're breathing in and out, as one knows, Eastern philosophy, Eastern religion focuses a great deal on just breathing, to really drop our mind and just listen to our body, which helps us tap into the inner spirit that is available to us. So this is a sign of God in us, movement and rest, very difficult to understand. What does he mean? He says, we are moving and yet at rest. The contradiction has dissolved in us. Now we are a synthesis of all contradictions. We are talking and yet not. We talk and yet there is silence. We love, yet we don't love, because the need to be loved has disappeared. We are alone and yet amidst you, because you cannot disturb our loneliness. We are in the crowd, but not of the crowd, because the crowd never penetrates us. We live and move in this world, but we don't belong to this world. We may be in it, but the world is not within us. So this is what Jesus says. It is a movement and rest. Look at us. We move, and yet there is no tension in the movement. We walk, but at the center of our being, there is no movement because there is no motivation to reach anywhere. We have attained. Again, I could go on and on, but that to me is a pretty neat way of words there. The author, Osho, or whoever helped Osho write this book, that's a very interesting explanation, and it's sometimes as we read these signposts, these words, they do put us at peace. So with that, I want to go on a little bit about what I found out in climate engineering, because, again, this ever-present man, Dane Wigington, has comes out with some amazing news, and it's painful news often, and I'll give one example. One can find it, it's only about a one-minute video clip that I saw last night after getting home from work, but it shows the reality that most of the rest of the world is not, or at least the developed world is not aware of, and that's animals struggling to survive in Botswana. You know, one could look that up, just Google it. And what it shows is this lake that has, thanks to the drought, is pretty much gone. It's turned into mud. And there's hippopotamus, there's water buffalo or cattle. They look like huge cattle. And they're all just, they're either gone, dead, laying in the mud, or some are still alive, stuck in the mud and just waiting to die. It's an extremely, how should I say, ugly reality that, you know, that approaches the planet day by day. In other words, there's always been droughts, but there's, you know, they're becoming ever more extreme. And that leads me into this discussion that Dane had about the dryness of the air, thanks in most large part to the geoengineering, climate engineering operations. But he opens with something about some words: profit, power, personal pleasure. Contrast that with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Again, we're endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, as our Constitution says. And now we must ask, is it profit, power, personal pleasure, or is it life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? And, you know, in the pursuit of truth, that's the way I see it, one finds happiness. So, and also in knowing truth, the happiness comes from acting upon it. Not, you know, if there's an unpleasant truth or a really ugly truth, it's a betrayal not to do something about it. And as it's been said, you know, the worst offense in many ways of good men is not to act on the truth, it's to remain silent. So there's been this UN report that the Earth's oceans are turning from friend to foe. Oceans absorb a quarter of the carbon dioxide that humanity emits, and perhaps even near 50%. These things are not cut and dry, but at least estimated. The oceans have soaked up more than 90% of the additional heat, and that's what really opened my eyes to the credibility of this website, that you know, that's a pretty established fact. I don't think there's a great deal, even if it was absorbed 80% of the heat or 70% of the heat, what it made me realize is, yes, we don't live in the ocean, but the ocean is taking the hit. It's soaking up all the consumption that we put into the earth, and it's masking the problem of a heating planet because water has such an absorptive capacity. But of course, the point of it is these changes have happened so rapidly. The ocean has soaked up so much heat. There's bound to be a slingshot effect, and that slingshot effect is already in process. So the same oceans that nourished evolution are poised to unleash misery on a global scale, says the report. Carbon pollution is a trigger toward methane expulsion, which is lethal because methane is far worse than carbon dioxide for creating heat. In other words, it's like heated charcoals in a barbecue. Climate engineering is a major trigger on countless fronts, not mitigating, as they say, solar radiation management, which, you know, our power structure says is the intention is to cool the planet and reflect the sun. No, this is not mitigating the massive greenhouse gas buildup at all. It is only worsening it. That's what Dane has been finding and others over, you know, Dane especially over 15 years. So masking it from the public, attempting to mask it, using weather as a weapon also all over the globe. Again, if we, as you know, the Middle Eastern countries that we've given droughts to, well, that indeed we're cooking, we're heating, we're using energy, excessive amounts of energy to heat these areas of the globe. So from the course of both those activities, making the immensity of what we face far worse, not better. Though carbon dioxide is needed for life, when organisms have adapted over millions of years to a specific atmospheric and aquatic chemistry, when that chemistry is radically altered by humans, the entire web of life is thrown out of balance. Earth's life support systems begin to fail. The U of Technology at Sydney, Australia, they're just studying ocean acidification and plankton. Oxygen 2 and the base of the food chain is plankton, you know, the planetary base. So plankton gives us that oxygen, and obviously ocean acidification doesn't help. It harms. And also the sun's intensity, which we receive now. In other words, with the collapse of the ozone layer, thanks in large part to climate engineering, thanks in most part to climate engineering, you may not feel on a relative, let's say it's 60 degrees outside, but if I'm sitting at the soccer stadium watching a game, my skin will burn. You know, it's just like I have to cover myself. But that's what radiation is, radiative heat, not convective heat. So when a car, for example, gets so hot, you can melt something on it, that's radiative heat. And the more intense, in other words, with the loss of ozone, we get smaller wavelengths. We get the ultraviolet light, the smaller wavelengths, the more dangerous wavelengths. In other words, without ozone, there is no life on this planet. So these changes are extremely alarming, but they need to be explained. And another factor to consider is our DNA, you know, the stuff that we have to reproduce our cells and our bodies and continue on, that will mutate when, you know, it'll destroy some of our own DNA because these wavelengths are so tiny, they're like pins going into our body. That's the best way I can put it. So current civilization doing what it's done was never sustainable. At best, we can salvage, and the largest priority needs to come first, which is to stop climate engineering. So many so long believe that government was there to protect and provide for citizens, and so far from the truth. For decades, populations, in their personal pursuits of pleasure, there's been a cancer behind the curtain that was growing and metastasizing into every imaginable arena, the human race and the web of life. So when I've spoken about the film clip, The Shadows That Rule, it's hard to fathom, but there's a pathology that as we climb up the hierarchy, some very psycho people get at the top. And even though you could call it a shadow government, it's visible. There's people like Henry Kissinger, this is a big new Brzezinski, Mr. Cheney, you know, that are very much a part of the workings of the eternal war, the war on nature that we find ourselves in, which is a war against ourselves. That's my opinion. Don't trust me. And this is not to say it's Democrat or Republican either. Remember, it was President Johnson, when he was vice president, who said, "He who controls the weather controls the world." How psychopathic can you get? So, this is a little off the subject, but again, with climate engineering, forest fires happen, trees die, and, you know, what do? We blame the beetles. We blame nature. There's not enough trees to cut off, according to official narrative of the present administration. We need to cut the trees, and it wouldn't be a problem. But again, if trees are suffering from ozone and burning at the top and being poisoned in the soil from the bottom by the nanoparticles that are sprayed and end up in the rainwater and get into the root system, the tree becomes sick. Well, if a tree is sick, the beetles will take over. So when scientists scratch their head, they better wake up. It's how can it be that so much of academia will not even look at climate engineering and its causes, when its causes are so deep that and so easily explainable when you look at it? So the hydrogen cycle gets cut off. Ozone from the top down, trees fry, rainfall of toxic bioavailable metals like aluminum poisons the systems, root systems. And there's other factors. New Scientists and other, that's a publication, New Scientists. They're finding that plant growth has declined drastically around the world due to dry air. I found this really helpful because when I talk to people at a booth or exhibit, we need to understand climate engineering spray is a desiccant. Overall, the amount of desiccation explains why the air is so dry, and that's what scientists are finding. The lack of atmospheric water vapor has caused global decline of plant growth, an immense decline, up to 59% in growth rates. So yes, the plants are growing, but they grow very slowly. There's a physics phenomenon called vapor pressure deficit. And what the vapor pressure deficit, the VPD, it's the difference between pressure that would be exerted by water vapor when air is fully saturated, as it should be when we have a warming planet. There should be a lot of evaporation going on. And, okay, so it's the difference between the pressure that would be exerted by water vapor when the air is fully saturated and the pressure it actually exerts. So, again, we're finding that the air is dry, so the vapor pressure deficit is very large. And when this deficit increases, the pores on the surface of leaves that facilitate gas exchange close up, resulting in lower photosynthetic rates. The plants are not breathing. They're not respirating. Their stomata are shut because it's so dry, and the ultraviolet light is also so intense. They simply stop breathing. Boy, I give a lot of credit to climate engineering here, because millions of tons of these desiccants are sprayed in the sky. So no need to scratch heads as to why it's dry. It just makes me angry that, you know, all the suffering, not even the animals, the hippopotamus we're talking about. We're talking about plants shutting off their ability to grow. It's like a slow death. So when, you know, plants not growing fast, then they're not absorbing carbon and they're not exhaling oxygen. So there's the shortage of oxygen. The complex dynamics of climate change may be responsible. That's what this article says in New Science. Decrease in wind speeds over the oceans, then water vapor doesn't blow over land as readily. Again, when we're messing with the climate, there's a decrease in wind. That's from climate engineering in large part. So that there becomes that deficit over vegetative areas. Climate engineering blocks sun, direct light. That also reduces evaporation. When you have a clear sunny day, yes, evaporation happens. Evaporation, I would argue, cools. And I should add, some of the proponents of climate engineering, like Bill Gates, are not aware. They'll say, or, you know, other scientists will say that if we have more water vapor, then that's not good. In other words, water vapor is also a greenhouse gas. So, you know, how ridiculous is that? These same people want it to be dry. They want forest fires. I just can't. It just drives me crazy sometimes. Because even if we have more water vapor, we have more circulation. We have more wind. We have more evaporation. What does evaporation do? It cools. When my body's wet and the wind blows, I feel cool. It's so simple. Where was I here? So we have this stillness of the wind, and we have the loss of evaporation. And here's another problem with this deficit, this vapor pressure deficit. Our planet is warming. That also plays a role. So give temperature only a certain amount of water vapor, and yet we're a warming planet. So that further increases the deficit. As temperatures on land increase, upper limit on the amount of water vapor the atmosphere can hold will increase. So the deficit gets larger still, because that water is not coming into the atmosphere. The water vapor just isn't there. So indeed, you know, where we'll get blizzards and massive rainstorms that nature starts, but that humanity steers. We also get stifling dryness, where, you know, the countries in the Middle East after 9/11, for example, had 1,000-year droughts. And again, as Dane Wigington says, the coincidence of that is the chances of that, all five countries having those severe droughts, is zero, unless somebody did it. So climate engineering and the desiccant blocking sun particles, convection thwarting particles, wind down, evaporation down. This is the myopic tunnel vision, where water vapor is a greenhouse gas, so they approach it like the pharmaceutical industrial complex. A vision that doesn't take the whole into account. They're trying to reduce water vapor, trying to block the sun, and all the while, the ozone is going down, poisoning the planet, disrupting the hydrological cycle, killing the Earth's life support systems, from plankton, the trees, to everything else. Where are the environmental groups? Satellites show corresponding drops in vegetative rates. between 1982 and 1998. 1998 was the warmest year. This was the pivot point. That's when climate engineering drastically increased and plant growth went drastically down. That's when the term climate change came in to, so people wouldn't become alarmed. It used to be global warming. Climate change was a softer word. So, you know, just like chemtrails and jet sprayed aerosol dispersions, semantics, the way we interpret words is very, very important. And again, some things like climate change are meant to mislead people, to let them go back to sleep when we should be awake and acting. So the engineers knew they'd create weather whiplash. And interestingly, in the year 98, there was a decrease in tree ring width, went down. So that was the same year there was way more contrails. And so done with that physics lesson for the day, but I hope those listening have taken to heart just how another few examples of how devastating this technology is, why it is mathematically the number one threat. I'll just wrap it up here to say a little bit about the media. Dane had a 10-minute clip from PBS, I believe, no, CNBC. And I have some other information here, but I'll try to... Well, basically, it showed people like Bill Gates and proposals for SCOPEX. And the idea behind this is to send a balloon up into the stratosphere. So the existing climate engineering is mostly from the upper troposphere. But the higher you go, the more effective it is. So sending a balloon up in the troposphere and then spraying some particles, you know, there's 14 foundations behind Bill Gates and his efforts to get this process going. And eventually, as it goes on, and you know, during the clip, they acknowledge the dangers, but it's the overall opinion is, let's do this. And they, you know, there are, of course, some scientists that will speak out against this on this clip. They want to give both sides. But the overall impact of the film is to be an advocate for this and also to, in the future, make some kind of airplane vehicle that can spray, just as for the last 70 years has been happening. But they haven't had the type of aircraft that can go into the stratosphere because there's so little to keep it afloat. So I'm going to just take a little pause if there's any questions. We got to wrap up pretty quick. And I'll get back on the screen and I'll share a few of the corrections or the challenges that Dane Wigington has, you know, to this 10-minute clip.
King Priest, do you have any questions for Rob, Brother Rob?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm on, Brother Rob, go ahead and play the clip. I'm on the other line with Blog Talk. There's people that said they couldn't, they're trying to log in to the internet to listen to you, that it's distorted, so I'm talking to Blog Talk, so forgive me. But I opened up everyone's lines that called in. I'm just working on the internet side, so I guess my King Priest doesn't have anything to say right now. So go ahead and play that little clip for us, if you will.
Okay. Well, instead of playing the clip, which there's not time for, I'm just going to give some of the responses to the falsehoods. So number one, it says the video states that climate engineering could cause a long list of downstream consequences. And again, it's been going on for 70 years doing just that. So, you know, that it's just ridiculous where they pretend it hasn't even happened yet. It's just amazing. So the damage already has been incalculable. That over two-thirds of the population would support the use of geoengineering. While such a conclusion is deceptive, survey questions which completely omit the most relevant facts regarding the true danger and devastation that has already happened, you know, it's just a framed question for the public. Over 1,500 scientists have been surveyed. None were willing to deny the ongoing climate engineering reality on the record when you use scientific terms. So Professor Alan Robach, who is an advocate on that clip, who was featured in it, that disinformation video, he himself has acknowledged that climate engineering exists as long as you use the scientific words, not the word chemtrail. Geoengineering technology is cheap. This conclusion is deception on an unimaginable scale. First, the claims for the needed scale of climate engineering deployment are a small fraction of the scale on which climate engineering has long since already been deployed. So we're going back again and again. You know, the human health factor as well is nowhere named on this propaganda video. Number four, the Keith Group will be the first to conduct a geoengineering experiment. Again, it was Dane who confronted David Keith from the very beginning. When you put millions of tons of nanoparticles of aluminum into the sky that are going to rain down, have you studied the impact of that? And of course, David Keith had no answer. And yet here's the man that's going to be, you know, very much in charge of this SCOPEX project. No existing aircraft can inject particles into the stratosphere. First, the elevation of the stratosphere in the polar regions can be as low as 24,000 feet. All jet aircraft can far exceed that altitude, including heavily loaded military jet tanker aircraft. Next, the vast majority of clearly visible jet aircraft particulate spraying is occurring in the troposphere. I'm going to stop at that. I think time is up. Like I said, I can only sample some of this spiritual information and some of this physical information. One can go on geoengineeringwatch.org, and there's on the second box down on the right column, it says the title, Mainstream Media Coverage of Climate Engineering, What is the Agenda? There's just countless examples of, you know, dismissing the chemtrail conspiracists. But we're catching on. Public is beginning to know, so you never give up. And that's the end of what I have to say. So I thank you for your time and allowing me to come on this blog, and I hope you found some impactful words.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Brother Rob. King Priest, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
okay,
I have one quick question. Yeah, we can hear you. Someone
okay.
had a quick question. They got cut off. The internet's not working for some reason, but they had a quick question. They told me to ask you. Do you think that this is the they said the climate control, what's going on now? Do you think that every time they turn in the news, they're seeing all these crazy issues with people shooting up gas stations or families or police shooting people with mental illness? They said mental illness is a big, big factor right now, and they seem to think it has something to do with the climate control. Is that true?
Oh,
or what are your thoughts
you
on that?
Asking that question. I know, for example, Prince said there was some kind of magnesium or, you know, one of the metal elements that they thought was sprayed in the air, our own Prince from Minnesota, and that it that kind of thing, if you breathe it in, could make your emotions go down and get you depressed. There may well be. I know people in aircraft that go through these trails, they suffer sickness, but that's more of a physical sickness. I would put it more on the physical side. To me, this thing about mind manipulation, that's more of a disinformation, a purposeful disinformation to take you off the actual physical things that climate engineering is doing and the physical destruction of the web of life that is happening. So, gosh, if I could find a quote that I had about that same topic. Well, I guess I best do it off the top of my head because I have to get going soon here. But yeah, that's exactly what they use, that these conspiracy theorists with their chemtrails, they think it's for mind control. No, that's just disinformation. It's part of the cover up.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
Hey, Rob. Once again, great, great piece. I think you said something earlier about how the aluminum is ending up in the plants and in the water. If it's killing the plants, then it's in no doubt probably killing us as well. If it's in the water.
Oh, yes. It's been found in humans in heart tissue. Ernest, good question. Yeah, that peer-reviewed study confirming after peer-reviewed study after peer-reviewed study confirming.
Papa, can you mute your phone while he's talking? Can you mute your phone, baby, while he's talking? Thank you.
Yeah, again, great question. Indeed, this is poisoning our tissues, animal tissues, human tissues, plant tissues. And, you know, it just simply has a poisoning effect. And I'll add to that, the world-renowned neuroscientist was saying that when you take aluminum in its pure form out of the soil or out of the Earth's crust, within the Earth's crust, it's harmless because it's bonded to silicates. It neutralizes it. But when you take aluminum out, it's short 3 electrons, so it's highly reactive. What it's going to do when it's tiny and gets in your bloodstream, and it's going to replace things like iron, you know, which we have in our blood, or it's just a mess. You know, it's going to get in. It's a cause of Alzheimer's, and they're proving peer-reviewed study after peer-reviewed study that it's dumbing us down.
So it is a possibility that the aluminum is causing mental illness. As the other caller stated, that is, you know, the climate control.
Right. I shouldn't, you know, that is a valid point. I kind of knocked it down. But it's, the reason I knock it down, because when you say mind control, you get into this Twilight Zone kind of thinking, that duty, 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 you know, this is weird. And this is crazy, and it, you know, people then more easily dismiss what the media wants to cover up. This is the crown jewel of the power structure, the military-industrial complex, this technology. And they know, though they have this addiction to power and control that won't stop, they know that the moment the population finds out about it, they're doomed. You know, they don't want you to know. They want to go on conquering the world till there's no world left. That's the pathology of this hierarchical power structure. That, again, since the time of agriculture in the Bible, where the tribe of Cain, I would say to put it simple, used weapons to take over and destroy, they became exempt from natural law. In other words, if you're going to destroy other species, then your species, though it may grow its food supply and its population, at the loss of the rest, then it's going to collapse. So, indeed, there's some sacred meaning to the Bible in Genesis, but we have to be very careful. And again, this Eastern philosophy, I think, helps point out the being in the here and now, in the present, and seeing reality for what it is, even if it's ugly, and acting upon what you see as true, and not letting the future, the past, your emotions get you bent out of shape.
I was just parroting once again off the original caller. I don't think they had made the statement that it was mind control. I think they more so agreed that it would be a dummy down effect because it caused mental illness. It causes mental illness, and that's the thing that's going and that's climbing the charts. You know, when you look around, it's
it
more
is
suicide now. Suicide in the air. People is you know. Yeah,
that's a good clarification. I'm glad you clarified. That is very true. But again, like I say, let's not marginalize one thing and distort it and make it correlate for me. Let's get a clearer picture of the of everything it's doing, and among them, it is dumbing us down indeed.
Right,
and
it's a cascade, so to say. It's a cascade of events.
Yeah.
They gotta stop. You know, if it don't, then like you said, it won't be nothing left. And that brings us back to Matthew 24, when the Lord says, if you don't bring an end to these things, there'll be no flesh saved. That includes you and I, the birds, the insects, the trees, the fish. There would be no flesh saved, not even an earth crust. So we're here. Man is at the point now that we can perform that prophecy when he spoke that 2,000 years ago, whereas we had only what we call a fire or a cannon or something, slingshot. But now we got nuclear arsenals that all we need is 7 to annihilate the entire planet. And we have thousands upon thousands just in the States alone, and thousands upon thousands in the Soviet, you know, all of Soviet and its allies. So we're here, you know. If it ain't for climate control, then it'll probably be World War III. Either or, the prophecy is this: is that he's going to come back and he's going to have to stop it before there's nothing left, or else how can the meek inherit the earth if there's no earth left? You know, but then he prophesied in Revelation that the earth is going to be 7 times hotter. That's prophecy is moving right now. So
it is moving. Oh my gosh, is it? And that's what Eckhart is saying. I thought that was interesting about his book and why it's such a popular book, is because he is acknowledging the possible end. But at the same time, he's saying, look, you know, people are receptive to what I'm teaching, because this consciousness, that's what meant. It's not like one person coming to save the earth, Jesus coming back as one physical person. It's everybody getting to that higher level of consciousness that Jesus was teaching. Well, that's the gong. I really do have to get going. And again, bless you all for this time.
Thank you for taking the time out. Once again, we want to thank Rob Christensen for also bringing some very, very, very pertinent information that we should be aware of. Hey, man, and so have I. You can catch Rob here every other Wednesday. It's Sounds of Living Waters, Invisible Secrets, and Visible Powers, or Dependent Upon. The topic is Visible Powers and Invisible Secrets. So right now, I guess we're dealing with the visible powers and the invisible secret. So, and that's exactly what the brother's warning us and trying to keep us aware of, that you have powers just at work, and the people is not paying attention. And as long as the people are asleep, these people will destroy the planet out of greed. So just note this, that we do have a voice pertaining to these things. With that being said, I want to thank Christian once again for a wonderful yourself. You want to be back here later on this evening at 7 o'clock p.m. It sounds a little water for the Nation of Peace of Israelites out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Teacher being aka Nehemiah Israel, aka Nehemiah Israel, aka Little Israel, bringing that kingdom state of mind. That kingdom state of mind. You want to be here for that. So with that being said, we want to thank everybody for that time. We hope we edify someone. As we say, it's living waters. Do what?
Read your Bible. Sounds of the living water radio show. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the most high laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under his love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water radio show. Sounds of the living water radio show.